Welcome to Crosswords, the podcast about practical Christianity. What does it look like to walk in Jesus' footsteps? How do I live in a culture hostile to godliness? These are questions that we will answer as we get our minds and heart on Jesus.
Good afternoon, family. How joyful it is to be with the Lord's saints. Today, as we continue our series, The Mighty Deeds of God, we're going to do something a little different as we consider the power of God's providence. For such a time as this, the unseen hand of the providence of God, something that we still witness to this day. This is one of the mighty deeds of God that is still working in our lives today. And I hope that you can relate as we go through the story of Esther. The book of Esther contains a compelling narrative of God's providence. It unfolds in the ordinary lives of Jews as we see God position them in different points of power to save His people from annihilation. And God's name is famously absent from the text of Esther. And I think that is to make the point of His unseen providence woven throughout the narrative of the story. This story encapsulates the essence of divine timing and how God times every single thing in the lives of every single person precisely for His purposes. And we hear that echoed in Mordecai's phrase, "for such a time as this." That is a testament to God's orchestration. So we're going to see how, even though it's God's timing and it is His providence, it does require some things from us, which we will explore today. These three key moments in the story of Esther, reflecting on how God positions us for such a time as whatever you may be going through, whatever God is preparing you. He prepares you in the shadows. You don't even know you're being prepared, but He is preparing you for something, for a time when you're going to need the courage to take a stand. That's the testing point. That will be the litmus test for you, the courage to stand. And God will make it obvious, even if you're oblivious, as I tend to be, right? God makes it obvious to other people surrounding you that, hey, it's the time. The time has come for you to take the stand, and then you will experience victory because of God's providence, because you will realize how God has carried you through and will continue carrying you through. Let's look at each of these points presented in the text here. How the first one, preparation in the shadows. From Esther, we read, she was the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had adopted her as his own daughter. When her turn came to go to the king, she did not ask for anything. Let me give you a little bit of background, because you may not be familiar with the book of Esther. So what happened is, the king at this time of Assyria, he was very rich, and he had a wife named Vashti. And he wanted to show her off. And Vashti was like, I ain't having none of that. Now, she stood her ground. And so the king got very angry and said, well, you're not going to be queen anymore. And he had the first beauty pageant that we read about, and forever women were objectified from that moment on till this present moment in these beauty pageants. But it was not a beauty pageant like the ones that you hear of today. This was a forceful beauty pageant. In other words, Esther participated unwillingly. She was forced. She was hand-picked. And they had to go through beauty treatments and all kinds of things that lasted almost a year before they went up to the king to see who the king would pick to replace his former queen. So we're picking up the story here when now it's Esther's turn to go before the king. And so when her, I'm reading here from the next sentence, when her turn came to go to the king, she did not ask for anything except what Haggai, the king's eunuch, keeper of the women, suggested. Esther gained favor in the eyes of everyone who saw her. She was taken to King Ahasuerus in the palace in the 10th month, the month Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. The king loved Esther more than all the other women. She won more favor and approval from him than did any of the other virgins. He placed the royal crown on her head and made her queen in place of Vashti. So as I said before, this was not a voluntary beauty pageant. Perhaps the world got their ideas for beauty pageants from this practice that this ancient king started. I'm not in agreement with this. It doesn't mean that God promotes this kind of thing, just to let you know. Obviously, Vashti, that woman, is to be admired, I think, because she disapproved of being objectified doing this. But don't be mistaken, you know, Mordecai didn't volunteer Esther for this private beauty pageant. She was most likely taken against her will, like all the other virgins that participated, and because this was done at the pleasure of the king, nobody else. And we don't know even if families were compensated for this. Although we do see Mordecai, her uncle, enjoying a high position in the court, freely walking around the courtyard and near the harem where Esther was. So she had to go through this physical preparation to meet the king. 12 months of beauty treatment. The whole book of Esther gets into some of these things. It's like being a whole year at the spa. Some of you wouldn't object to that, right? Even if I'll force you to go to the spa for a year. But she did not know that all this time she was being prepared. She did not know. Seldom do we know as we go through life that we're being prepared for something. It's only in hindsight that we realize, and that's how we realize the providence that God is. So some of you are going to go through times, and maybe you didn't plan for them. Seldom we plan for things that are surprise events. What is our contingency? Can we really have a contingency for things that we don't know what to prepare for or how to prepare? Some of us have a contingency for retirement. You know, we have insurance. We have a 401k or whatever you want to have. But is that it? You know, what if we get diagnosed with a disease that we're not prepared to go? What if somebody in our family passes away? There's just so many things that can happen. What is your contingency plan? The only real contingency is to build trust in the Lord when it comes down to brass tacks. That's the only plan that is going to help you. And as we see how the story of Esther unfolds, you see that her faith, when it came time to shine forth, it was because she was believing in God and believing in the grace that He had for her. And it was not just evident to her uncle, but it was evident to the whole royal palace. It was a grace that was shining off of Esther in her, not just in her beauty, because yes, she was very beautiful, but more so in her character, more so in her person, and how she gracefully dealt with these evil people that were trying to annihilate her. This young Jewish girl, Esther, finding herself in a foreign palace, part of a beauty contest she didn't sign up for, against all odds, winning the favor of the king, all of a sudden she's placed in one of the highest positions of the land with a lot of influence. Some people would say, oh, she's lucky. You hear people saying that. Let me tell you, there is no such thing as luck. Luck doesn't exist. Okay? This is God's providence. And we need to program in our minds that there is no such thing as lucky or, oh, I was at the right place at the right time. No, you weren't. You were positioned in the right place at the right time by the one who knows all the times and places of your life. That is the providence of God. And He does so not for your pleasure, let me remind you, not to give you something, but this is for the greater good. God typically does things like this. Consider David. David, when he was young, he was tending his father's sheep. He was in obscurity. Nobody knew who he was. Even when Samuel came to his dad's house to anoint his sons to see who he was going to pick for a king, his father didn't even get him together. He kind of like left them out there in the field. And Samuel said, that's it. These are all your kids. He said, oh, I got one more. Don't pay any attention to him. And Samuel, no, you got to bring him in. So he was in his fields. He was fighting lions and bears. But all of that was not wasted because he was being prepared. He was going through a period of preparation. There is no experience wasted for the people of God. whether they be bad experiences that you had, and of course good experiences, but especially the bad ones are the ones that really prepare you for a greater mission, prepare you to be in sync with the providence of God working in your life. You probably don't know it, or maybe it is already being revealed to you, but whatever it may be, you are being prepared for actions that are not only going to make a difference in your life, but in someone else's, because that's how God works. Your decisions, your actions can and will have an impact in countless lives. Some who don't even know, some people you won't even know or will never meet, but indeed they will have an impact. I remember, just to give you an anecdote on this, that we had the first year that we moved into our house at Levittown, it was literally a trial by water and fire, literally speaking, because we had a fire in the house that first year, and then we had a flood. So I was like, okay, fire, flood, where's the blood coming? And so I didn't know what was happening. I was at a fellowship celebrating somebody's birthday. Yeah, Bart, that was the day. Yes, my phone rings. I'm like, why is my neighbor calling me? He barely knows me. I had just moved into the house. And I said, oh, let me turn on the security cameras to see if something's happening. Indeed, I saw fire trucks, police cars. I was like, okay, what's going on? I called my neighbor and says, your house is on fire. I was like, what?
Have you ever wanted to read the Bible in plain English, a language that you can actually understand and follow? Well, there is a translation like that called God's Word Translation by God's Word to the Nations Mission Society. This is the only translation of the Bible in English that follows a dynamic equivalent translation philosophy. It makes the Bible very easy to understand and it flows very naturally in the English language. You can follow along my podcast where I read to you from God's Word Translation for one whole year. You can search for the podcast on Spotify or your favorite podcast reader. Search for God's Word Translation by God's Word to the Nation Mission Society. You can also look it up under my name, Pedro Gelibert.
And he says, don't worry though, stay still. The policemen put it out. The policemen put it out. Okay, great. By the time I got home, nobody was there, right? They were all gone, and all I had burned down were some bushes and some other things. But I was like, man, I want to thank this policeman who did this. How do I get a hold of this guy? I don't even know who he was there. So I called the police department. I try to figure it out, and they tell me the name of the guy. And I forgot how. I think I had his number or I got his address somehow. I sent him a really nice letter of thank you. Never heard from him again. Years pass. All of a sudden, I get a call from some number, and I typically, you know, screen those calls because, you know, got a lot of spam calls nowadays. But for some reason, I said, let me pick this call up. I pick it up, and the guy says, oh, is this Pedro Gelibert? I said, yes. He says, I just wanted to thank you. I said, who are you? He says, I'm the policeman who put out the fire in your house. And I want to thank you because of your letter, I got a commendation. And I got a new position. And I was able to serve my family. And he kept saying all these things. And I was like, wow. So this is how things work. You never know what you're going to do. Even a small little thing, writing a letter, you don't even think about it. You do it, and then you forget about it. And all of a sudden, things come back, and you realize, wow, there was something that happened. So like Esther, you might find yourself in a season of waiting or preparation, not realizing what the future holds for you or for other people. But in your current position, whatever it is that you're going through right now, no matter how insignificant it may seem, what you want to do is think about embracing the present, whatever it may be. Maybe it's not where you want to be. Maybe you can't wait, you know. But like, who was it that sang it? Can't hurry love? Was it the Beatles? You can't hurry preparation, especially God's providence. You can't hurry it. God wants you to chill out, young people. Yes, eventually you're going to go to college. Eventually you'll get married. Eventually you'll buy a house. It's all going to happen, not in your time, in God's time, okay? Don't hurry up. Every moment counts. Embrace the present. That's how you're going to learn. And sometimes our cell phones get in the way of embracing the present. You have to learn to put it down and communicate and make eye contact and face contact with the people around you, because God is preparing you, whether it's a new job, a relocation, an unexpected leadership position. God is working out the details of your lives, positioning you where your unique gifts are going to shine forth, not to serve you. Again, this is not about you. This is about how we fit into His story. Remember, it's always about His story, not me. I'm just the supporting character, and I'm not even a good one, right? But thanks to the mercy of God, He allows me to be in His story. But He gets all the credit. Next, there is a time where you're going to have the courage to take a stand. Let's read here. Esther spoke to Hatak and commanded him to tell Mordecai, "All the royal officials and the people of the royal provinces know that one law applies to every man or woman who approaches the king in the inner courtyard and who has not been summoned, the death penalty, unless the king extends the gold scepter, allowing that person to live. I have not been summoned to appear before the king for the last 30 days." So what's this all about? What is Esther talking about here? She realized the plans that Haman, one of the king's advisors, had made. He really hated Mordecai. He had it in for the Jews. And he even got the king to sign into a law a day when they would annihilate all the Jews. And so when Esther and Mordecai get wind of this, they were preoccupied. And that's when Mordecai says, "Esther, you know, you got to talk to the king. You know, you got to go up to the king and say something." And Esther's first reaction, because she knew this law well, is, "I can't just go up into the king and say, 'Hey, how you doing?'" No, you can't do that, because if you go before the king without being summoned, he can kill you right there. That's a pretty severe law, right? Unless the king extends the gold scepter. That's the only thing. So, you know, when it comes time to take a stand in your life, there is a real risk that you're taking. It's not called faith for nothing, okay? It's not called courage for nothing when it comes time to take a stand, because there is real danger, there is real risk. But without that real risk or danger, then it wouldn't be real faith, would it, when it comes time for you to take the stand? So here was Mordecai's response, and I love this. This is the pivot, the climax of the book. "Don't think," he tells his niece Esther, "don't think that you will escape the fate of all the Jews because you're in the king's palace. If you keep silent at this time, relief and deliverance will come to the Jewish people from another place." That to me shows that Mordecai had faith, man. He says, "Look, if you decide not to do anything, I know God's going to save us somehow. Somehow it's going to happen. If you decide to renege and say no, He will save us. But you and your family will be destroyed because you failed to take a stand. You're going to get swept away." And then he adds the famous line, "Who knows? Perhaps you have come to your royal position for such a time as this." Yes, he didn't mince words, letting Esther know, hey, there are consequences for not taking a stand. It's not like, "Oh, I'm not going to do it." No, there are consequences. And we really need to remember that. So Esther springs into action as the faithful woman that she is. And she says, "Go and assemble all the Jews who can be found in Susa," that was the capital, "and fast for me. Don't eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my female servants will also fast in the same way. And after that, I'm going to go to the king, even if it's against the law. And if I perish, I perish." Wow. Now Esther shows the kind of faith that she had. That was her resolution. In the face of real danger, she says, "I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to go through it." That's what we call real courage. Real courage is not the absence of fear. No, it's the acknowledgement of it, but deciding that I'm going to go through with it anyway, even if I die. Okay, that's the kind of faith that saves. And that's where real courage comes from. It shows her humility too. I mean, even though Esther had easily gained the favor, I mean, you would say, "Hey, Esther, but you gained the favor of everybody. Come on, just prance right into the court. The king's going to be like, 'Hey, I'm so happy to see you.'" But look at Esther's humility. Just because she knew she had that favor, she didn't take advantage of it, did she? She's like, "I don't know, man. You know, he's the king. God knows what he's going to do. But if I die, I die. That is it." And so on the third day, Esther, dressed in her royal clothing, stood in the inner courtyard of the palace facing it. The king was sitting on his royal throne in the royal courtroom facing the entrance. And as soon as he saw Queen Esther standing in the courtyard, she gained favor with him. He extends the golden scepter in his hand toward Esther, and she approached and touched the tip of the scepter. Now you would think, oh, okay, it's all over. Woo! She passed the test. Oh, no. See, once you take a stand for something, you have to continue taking a stand. You'll see as we continue the story. But she was faced with this decree of annihilating her people, and she makes a bold decision despite the risk it has to her own life. She does approach the king, and her courage really stems from the words of her uncle and the faith of her uncle when he tells her, hey, for such a time as this, that's maybe why you're here. And so that made her think, and she had her faith in God. Moses did the same thing, didn't he? I mean, Moses stood before a very powerful king, didn't he? As a shepherd, as a Bedouin, right? As a carer of sheep, all of a sudden he comes into the highest court of the land because God said, let my people go. That takes a lot of courage. You know, imagine if one of you was summoned to stand before the presidency of the United States to plead a case for somebody. And you might think like, okay, number one, who am I? Why are you telling me to do this? I don't want to do this. Choose, you know, we go through the same thing Moses went through, right? Because we know it's going to be a lot of work to do that. It's not simple. But Esther did it. Moses did it. She bravely approaches King Xerxes, risking her life to save the people. But you know, Esther comes from a... After Esther, she actually imitated the faith of some women before her, and many women after her have imitated that kind of faith as well. Let's do a little review of this. This is Deborah, spoken of in Judges chapter 4 and 5, a prophetess and the only female judge mentioned in the Bible. And she played a crucial role in liberating the Israelites from the oppression of the Canaanites at the time. And so Deborah trusted in God's promise and led a decisive victory at Mount Tabor, highlighting her as a symbol of strong leadership and faith in the Lord to save her people. We have Rahab, one of my favorites. Rahab, a nobody living in the wall of Jericho, a prostitute living in the walls of Jericho, but displaying remarkable courage and really showing us kind of like a story similar to ours, right? Because we were nobodies. We could have been regarded as the same importance as a prostitute had back then, living in a hole in a wall. And because she had trusted in the name of the Lord way before the spies came in. Because by the time the spies comes in and she hides them, she's telling them that she believes in their God. That she has heard the stories of her God and she's fearful of their God. What a faith that woman had. No wonder she was the only one saved from the entire city. She recognized the power of God, and fearing for her family, she made a pact, and her actions were instrumental in the fall of Jericho. What faith she showed. Mary, the mother of Jesus, how can we forget her? Exhibiting unparalleled courage and faith when accepting the angel's mission. I mean, think about this. She's a girl. She's probably 15 or 16. Imagine, think back when you were 15 or 16, right? And an angel comes to you and says, you're going to have a baby from God. And you'd be like, okay, how's that going to play out? Because that's not going to be good. People are going to look at me, a mother pregnant. You know, they're immediately going to make assumptions about me being pregnant without a man in my life. Today's society, that already happens. But imagine long ago when that was really even more taboo than it is now. What she was going to face, the social ostracism, the personal risk, even. But what does she answer in Luke 1:38? She says, I am the Lord's servant. May everything you said to me be fulfilled. What faith, what courage. Her role as Jesus' mom is inspirational, showcasing her as a model of obedience and faithfulness. Let us move now to the more modern world. Some of you might recognize who this is. This is Corrie ten Boom. During World War II, she and her family harbored hundreds of Jews to protect them from the Nazi persecution in the Netherlands. And despite She being in grave danger and putting her family in grave danger from the Nazi regime. She eventually was captured even and sent to a concentration camp, but she survived and dedicated the rest of her life to sharing the forgiveness of the Son of God. And her story is a very powerful testament to courage in a fearful and dangerous time, risking her own life for the sake of others. And I love this. I thought the movie was really good. Maybe you'll agree with me. Harriet Tubman, born into slavery in the United States, but became such a leading figure in leading other people to freedom. You know how much courage it took for a woman, an African-American woman at that day and age, to do the things that she did by herself, by the way, establishing this kind of legacy and escorting over 300 slaves to freedom. No wonder she's an iconic figure. All these women, each in their own time and context, exemplified the courage that it took and their belief in God's providence, that God would indeed make a way. Their faith led them to this unwavering courage, and their stories continue to inspire us and guide us. What are some modern day applications of this? Well, just remember this, courage is not the absence of fear. You might think that people who exhibit courage, oh, they're not really afraid, but I'm so afraid I can't even move, right? But no, you interviewing a lot of these people who've done courageous things, the first thing they'll tell you is that, no, I am afraid. Fear is not gone. It's that we triumph over that fear by faith. And you know what? Almost everyone who has had some courageous act, they go to God immediately. They give thanks to God. It just never fails. Because to exhibit that kind of courage, you have to believe in God. You have to believe that God is supporting you in some way or another. And that exactly is God's providence. That's what His providence is all about. Us believing that He is establishing the right time, putting us in the right place. It is Him guiding us, not ourselves making these decisions. Courageous acts, especially in defense of others who are not able to defend themselves, are a manifestation of God's timing and purpose. And that's when we get through victory. But notice that now as we talk about this third point of victory, victory doesn't come easy.
If you like this podcast, please show your support by clicking on the support link on my Anchor FM profile. This ensures I will continue producing authentic Christian content as the Lord allows me. Thank you and have a blessed day.
It wasn't just that one time that Esther had to face the king and risk her life to come before the king when it was the death penalty possibly hanging over your head when you came before the king unannounced. Did you know that she had to do that two more times? The second two are not as obvious as the first one, but I'll share with you now. Here it says in Esther chapter 7, Queen Esther, this is her going before the king. She had planned very craftily two dinners. You can see her planning, okay, how am I going to do this? How am I going to share with the king what I know? And she could have just told the king, hey, this is what's happening. But we see her wit, we see her charm, we see her intelligence, and how she lovingly manipulated the situation to bring this truth to the king, because she was going to accuse his right-hand man. How was she going to accomplish that so gracefully? Well, she planned two dinners. And this is the second dinner that we're reading about here. Queen Esther, whatever you ask will be given to you. Whatever you seek, even to half the kingdom, will be done. Queen Esther answered, If I have found favor with you, your majesty, and if the king is pleased, spare my life. This is my request. Spare my people. This is my desire, for my people and I have been sold to destruction, death, and annihilation. If we had merely been sold as male and female slaves, I would have kept silent. Indeed, the trouble wouldn't be worth burdening the king. And then King Ahasuerus spoke up and asked Queen Esther, who is this? And where is the one who would devise such a scheme? Esther answered, the adversary and enemy is this evil Haman, probably pointing to him because he was like right next to her. So as you can see, she was not done yet. She had to come before the king. She had to have courage once again to go through her whole plan. I mean, think about this. This must have been nerve-wracking for her because it was not over. Yeah, she had the courage to have gone to the first part, but it was not over. How many of us have been in a situation where it took quite a few attempts to get through some nerve-wracking event? Right? The courage had to be continuous. And the belief in God, that God was supporting you through this whole incident, had to be continuous. But that's typically how it works out. She had to face this guy, Haman. She had to face him and accuse him before the king. Those are not easy things to do, especially when you don't like confrontation. And when you want to avoid all these kinds of things, when you would rather be in your room, you know, twiddling your thumbs, as opposed to being in these kinds of situations. But this was not over yet. Yes, she accused Haman, and most of you know what happened after this. Haman was quickly dealt with. He was sentenced to death, but it was not over. It was not over. Haman was dead, but that law that the king had signed was still in effect. The Jews were still going to be annihilated. So here she comes again before the king, a third time. She fell at his feet, wept, begged him. Here's where it all comes down. All the emotions come out. Begged him to revoke the evil of Haman the Agagite and the plot he had devised against the Jews. And the king receives her again. The king extended the gold scepter toward her. So she got up, stood before the king, said, "If it pleases the king, if I have found favor with him, if the matter seems right to the king, and I am pleasing in his eyes, let a royal edict be written. Let it revoke the documents the scheming Haman, son of Hammedatha the Agagite, wrote to destroy the Jews who are all in the king's provinces. For how could I bear to see the disaster that would come on my people? How could I bear to see the destruction of my relatives?" So as you can see here, there was much grace that she was given because the king keeps extending his scepter to her. But there was this matter here. She was not done. She had to keep going before the king. The king was not doing it. This kind of like speaks to this issue. Like, if you want to do it right, do it yourself, right? Sometimes you have to be personally involved. And that requires that continuous commitment to courage and belief in God to see a matter reach its end. Because God is saying, "You're it. You got to do it." We can't say, "Okay, pass the baton. I'm done. I don't want to do it anymore. Somebody else who wants to do it in my place." No, that doesn't happen, does it? Rarely. And that's what makes it so difficult. Yeah, God gave me the baton. I must see it through. And that requires the consistent courage and humility and trust in God's providence. There was still this hard work to revoke this decree. I don't know if you know, but in the book of Esther, it says that just because the king was king, he couldn't just say, "Okay, I cancel this law and it's over." No. In Persia, once a king issued a decree, it could not be revoked. That was the problem. So what they had to do is write another decree to say, "Okay, this, what's going to happen this day, we're going to give the right now to the Jews to defend themselves when it's time for the massacre to come." That was the best that they could do at the moment. And so Esther appeals to the king once again. And the king now gives Esther and her uncle Mordecai, because Mordecai had kind of come up in importance now in the court once Haman's evil plot was uncovered. So he tells them, "Write in the king's name whatever pleases you concerning the Jews." So the king gave them full authority now. The position had been fully realized. Her influence and the time and the position God had given her now at this point is being fully realized, because now all authority was given to Esther and Haman to write this counter decree that was going to help them. And he even gave them the signet to seal it and seal the documents. She was given much grace because she had won the hearts of the people. So quickly, a copy of the text issued as the law throughout the province was distributed to all the people, so the Jews now could be ready to avenge themselves against their enemy on that day. And it happened. We're not going to get into the details of how it happened, but towards the end of the book, we read about this great day of feasting and rejoicing. But who did all the hard work? Who put the sweat and the tears? Who had the courage to see it through? Only one person, really. It all hung on Esther. Yeah, Mordecai was there encouraging her, but he didn't have the position of influence. Esther had it. Brothers and sisters, when God has graced you with an influential position, it's because He means you to use that in a positive, in a glorifying way, for Him and for people, not for yourself. It's not meant for you to take advantage of it, because He can quickly switch it. Didn't He do that with Saul and David? All right? But He means for you to use that position and use it well for the glory of His name. It says here, the Jews in Susa had assembled on the 13th and 14th day. They rested on the 15th day of the month, and it became a day of feasting and rejoicing. You know, this is the day that the Jews still celebrate nowadays. It's called Purim or Purim, and that means lot, like in casting dice. And the reason why it's named that is because that's how Haman devised his wicked plot. He cast dice, and it fell on the 14th day of Adar. And so now they named the feast Purim, and the Jews still celebrate it to this day. So the outcome of her plea was nothing short of miraculous. It is God's providence. Not only is she and her people saved, but justice is served. All because this one humble woman believed that God had put her in this position and believed that God would see her through. And there are many examples of this throughout the scriptures. Remember Joseph, after years of suffering unjustly for many things, he saw God's purpose at the very end of his journey, telling his brothers, you know what, you guys meant evil against me, but I know now God meant it for good. So he didn't hold any ill feelings. And that's a person who trusts God. When we don't hold any ill feelings because we see God's greater plan, that means we're trusting in God's providence. We know it all has been orchestrated by God. And Esther's story culminates in a very similar fashion, showing how everybody who trusted in God received a blessing. Our lives are filled with unseen battles, victories, like Esther and her people. We really need to recognize God's hand in our victories, whether they're large or small. Celebrate the times when we see His providence. And when we're at that low point in our lives, realize that we're being trained for something greater. Whether it's healing from a disease, I know those are tough, or even the restoration of a loved one, like we see here in the parable of the prodigal son. All those different things bring different kinds of grief and loss to our life. But we have to have the courage to take a stand in these times and take a stand in our faith, knowing that God is working, noting that He is guiding us, because His fate for us is always meant as a good thing for all those who believe and trust in God. And that's what the story of Esther teaches us, that we can trust God's timing and we can trust His providence. All we got to do is hang in there and do the right thing when the time comes. The gospel is really the mirror of this, because Jesus did risk His death, didn't He? He faced real danger. Not only did He face real danger, He was willing to succumb to death itself. He knew that He came for the purpose of dying. See, Esther knew that she had the risk of death, but she trusted God. Jesus knew and willingly submitted to that death. And while some of us may look at His death and be filled with pity and be sad and say, oh, Jesus suffered so much for us, you know that that's not necessarily the kind of reaction Jesus wants to get out of you. Because Jesus told the woman who were weeping for him, don't weep for me. Weep for you. Because if you realize what I'm doing here, you're going to run to the cross. Because I'm doing this for you. Don't be like the world. Oh, the story of Easter. Oh, Good Friday. Oh, I'm so sad. I cry when I see the movies of Jesus. And leave it that and that's it? No. You're missing the point. You should be crying for yourself then. Because Jesus willingly did this for you. It wasn't like his life was taken away accidentally. No, he came for that express purpose. He knew the risk. He willingly got into it and willingly triumphed over evil. He could not pass that baton to anyone else. He knew he was in that position for that. And he finished the work for you. Now the question is, what are you going to do about it? What will you do with Jesus? Paul says here in 1 Corinthians 15:3 and 4, this is the message of most importance. This is it. There is no other message that you're going to hear in your life as important as this one. Because as our brother Zach so eloquently said, we're all destined to die. We all will face that risk of death. We will all be in it one day. Nobody can escape it. We cannot leave this world without dying first. But there is a way out. Jesus gave us the second choice. Without Jesus, there is no choice. Yeah, you're going to die and that's it. But with Jesus, he opened the door now so that you can say, you know what? I choose life. I choose life because the Son of God chose me when I didn't even know what was going on. He chose me. And so I want to somehow participate in that death, that burial, that resurrection. I want to be born again. And that's exactly what the gospel does. It gives us that opportunity to take a stand in this good news, but we need courage to take that stand and now look forward to new life. So the story of Esther is a powerful testimony to the providence of God, how he works behind the scenes to accomplish his purpose at the right time. Your story is being written as we speak. God is working, weaving things through in your story. You and I don't know how our stories are going to end, but we're in it. We're in the story, and as you reflect on Esther and on your own life, remember, there are not maybe one, but a few right times, such a time as this. There are a few times that I've used that phrase already in my life, and I'm thankful and grateful to God to have recognized it so that in whatever position I'm in, I can do something that affects many people, not just me, and it also results in the glory of God, and we have that victory. So as the elders come forward, really think about what some of the things in your life are preventing you from taking the courage to stand. Are you willing to pass up on the opportunity to stand for God and to make a difference, not just in your life, but in the life of so many other people? What is preventing you from doing that? Is it a fear of something? Has something happened that you don't understand and you want to get clarity on? Is something preventing you from moving forward in your faith? Do you feel like you're stuck somehow in your life in some reason or some way? Well, Jesus wants you to get unstuck. Come forward and lay it at his feet. And if you haven't taken the step of baptism yet, please come forward and do that and begin a new life in Jesus' name. Thank you for your attention. God bless you.